Hey, I'm Troy Bronson, and this is From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. This episode has two parts, a conversation and a guided meditation. We're connecting you to a variety of contemplative teachers, hearing their story as well as sharing a meditative practice. If you don't have time right now to hear the story, take a look at the show notes for when the meditation portion begins, and just feel free to skip ahead and come back later to the conversation. We've also learned from earlier episodes that there's kind of a change in mind space between the passive participation of listening to a podcast and the active participation of sitting with a meditation. And we're all about helping you get a practice going. So toward this end, we've developed a pocket practice, which will come out later in the week. Today's conversation is with Marcia Foster Boyd. She's a minister who has served for decades in theological education as a dean, as a president, as head for accreditation. And in all of these cases, she was the first African-American woman in that position. And a lot of our conversation is about the history of that and then a transition to the newest collaborative work she's doing with Matthew Abrams called The Bridge Collective, where they together are forming a learning community around interspiritual community leadership. This is going to be a great conversation. You could be doing a million different things right now while listening. Maybe it's time to start weed whacking the edge of the grass that's getting out of control, or you're replacing a cracked windshield on your car. That said, why not take a look around you, take a couple deep breaths, and enjoy listening in. Hopefully you'll be able to sit with us and meditate in the second half. Well, it's a real joy to have Marcia Foster Boyd with us. Thanks for the time to get together, Marcia.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's great to be with you today.
Yeah. So we met a little less than a year ago at a gathering with a number of different spiritual entrepreneurs, and you know, you were kind of a wisdom figure in that group, and I wonder if you would just share a little bit about your life experience that puts you in this place of working around spiritual formation. I know before that you were involved in academics, that you've been involved in social justice work. So just kind of give us a little context for your life experience and where you come from.
I came to the gathering after an invitation to apply as a participant. Mm-hmm. And when I applied, the Spirit told me to emphasize that I'm an elder, that I'm not a 30-something or a 40-something, and that I was bringing life experience to the event that could be beneficial. And so when I got the response was, we don't want you to be a participant, we want you to be a part of the team. So I became part of that team, and I was one of the elders, literally. And then I think eldership comes also through experience. Mm-hmm. And I've had 40 plus years of experience as an ordained minister. So I retired a couple of years ago from active ordained ministry in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, which is a Methodist denomination. Mm-hmm. And also in those 40 years, took some time and knew that part of my training had to be getting an advanced degree. So after about 10 years in the parish, I went back to school and started a PhD program in California at the Graduate Theological Union.
Yeah.
And did that program over a quite a long period of time, but I finally finished it. During that time, I took a job at United Theological Seminary there in your area in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah.
And I taught there for 9 years. My area of specialization is pastoral care and counseling. So I taught those classes, and as a part of that teaching, began teaching what we at that time were calling multicultural issues. And mm-hmm. So I taught multicultural issues in pastoral care, and I taught African-American issues in pastoral care, and began really helping students to understand you can't understand an academic discipline apart from the people. And so I began way back then connecting theology with practice. And that, of course...
Imagine that.
You know, the academic arena is a funny thing. Many people keep it intellectual, but there are many of us who can't separate our theology, what we believe, from who we are, and then who we are from who we are in the world and with and then among other people. So it was a great time for me to stretch, both in terms of my teaching and in my theological view. And after that, I was invited to become a part of the accrediting association. And I did that work of accrediting of seminaries for about 7 years.
That's right. Okay.
So I moved from one ivory tower, you could say, to the real ivory tower.
The Tower of Towers.
The real ivory tower was the accrediting association. So I did that. And when people would say, how's your job? How are you doing? And I would always say, I'm in school. Because at that time, I was learning about leadership. And I found that leadership in whatever we do, when we call ourselves leaders, when we say we're leading something, many times we don't know what we're saying. Many times we don't know what leadership really means. And so I really went to school observing and supervising committees. Went to school about leadership and helped people, helped women in leadership, helped academic deans in theological education learn and explore their own leadership, their leadership styles, their leadership experience, many things that we don't even think have to do with gleaning experience in leadership are about leadership. And so leadership became an important part of my journey as I learned, as I watched others who were leaders. And then after about 7 years with the Association of Theological Schools, I was invited to become president of a seminary. So I was president of Ecumenical Theological Seminary in Detroit, Michigan, for another 7 years.
Wow.
So that was my test. Okay, you want to be a leader?
Instead of talking about it,
Let's see what you're made of.
Oh, man.
And I loved the mission of the institution, which was that ETS was an academic institution geared to and created for the urban environment. So it was the mission of the school was to do ministry in the city and for the city. And I really loved that. And I lived in Detroit and experienced what it really means to be a Detroiter.
Yeah.
And
wow.
All that was in the early 2000s, and we all know about 2008.
Yeah.
When
no
things
kidding.
Crashed. Well, it really crashed in Detroit. So to be walking with an institution during that time in that city, and particularly in the area of theological work, again, where is God in the midst of all of this? And so our faculty was really on the front lines of doing writing and speaking during those hard times in the city. So it was a great time. And I retired from there 5 years ago.
Okay.
And so that's what I've been doing, and that's what I brought to the gathering that we shared together.
Yeah, yeah. In a little while, I want to hear more about the bridge, some of the work you're doing now. But I just to kind of follow the lead of what you've been talking about, talk a little bit about leadership then as an embodied practice. Like, there's this. I'm already hearing a theme in the way that you're describing this. That leadership is that our ideas, if you will, I don't know if this is your language, but it sounds like you're saying something like our ideas of self and other and God and right, all of that kind of, it shows up in our bodies in different ways. And then when experiences arise, our reactions to those things are really these leadership opportunities, these, how do we respond and how do we How do we make sense of what's happening in our bodies, but live in the world in a unique way as somebody called to lead? Does that sound like the right words to describe?
I would say yes. And I would say that we respond through our particularity. Mm. And I think that's where we get tripped up. Because we emphasize many times the particularity, my social location, my ethnic location, and we stay there sometimes too long. Mm-hmm. My denominational, my theological, and we and I think over time what I've learned, and I think this is if it could be called eldership language or eldership thinking. That we learn over time that those particularities sometimes are too narrow and we box ourselves off from others. And so it becomes an issue of if everybody is like me, talks like me, walks like me, thinks like me, believes like me, something's wrong. The world becomes too small. Hmm. And I've learned that I grow when I rub up against people who aren't necessarily like me, who don't necessarily think like me. It's comfortable, and it's our natural, probably our natural preference to be with folks who are like us. But I believe Spirit calls us out.
Mm.
That we, if we are confined to that familiar, I'll call it, space.
Mm-hmm.
We are limiting Spirit's ability to use us and then to receive what's out there beyond our familiarity. So I think that's where I'm landing these days. And that's not where I always was, but that's where I am now. And I think time has taught me that lesson. And it's counterintuitive, but I think it's real, and I think Spirit is counterintuitive.
So I think yeah.
I'm walking into something, in other words.
yeah. So, no kidding. So what would you say kind of brought in that shift for you into that, out of that place of kind of boxing ourselves in? I mean, I think these are precarious times in that folks like myself, middle-aged straight white males, have the benefit of friendships and access to scholarship of folks like James Baldwin and bell hooks or others that would just begin to kind of talk about whiteness and education and whiteness and in life. And so there's this invitation into a wider way of understanding culture and community. And then colleagues of mine and yourself as a woman and a person of color, where is that shift where you would say keep going into uncharted spaces where we aren't the same? Tell me some more about that.
That began for me when 4 years ago, probably, I was invited to take part in an organization called Mycelium. And that is an alternative learning community emphasizing crossing race, gender, sexualities, and religions. I think I brought the religious piece in. I think I brought mm-hmm. the spirituality in, but certainly they were working on, and also particularly cross-generational educational experiences. And I was in the process at that time of preparing a conference, what I was calling a conference, to honor a particular African-American woman who was a foremother for many of us in ministry, and her name was Ella Mitchell. So, and many people know her husband, Henry Mitchell, but Ella was very influential in giving many of us a space to write and preach sermons in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Mm. And so I felt after her death that we, as particularly African-American women, had not given her the appropriate honor. And so I was in the process of preparing this program, this conference, to honor her. And I was involved in with Mycelium. And all these 20-somethings who were entrepreneurs, techies, and had all these wonderful experiences were saying, well, Marcia, do you really just want to do a conference? And so they began just really pushing me to expand my view. So as the conference emerged and as we went finally and had the conference, I didn't want any more than 50 people there. And so I had 50 people, and most of those people were going to be just like me, middle age, older African-American women in ministry, retired from ministry, lay women who had callings of various kinds, you know, just the familiar crew.
Okay.
Well, by the time we got to Atlanta, your audience may not remember, by the time we got to Woodstock.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
By the time we got to Atlanta for this conference, I had a wonderful mix of that traditional, original group, but 9 folks from Mycelium came. And that group was so varied, but they were mostly young white people. And so here, the women from, you know, my traditional groups are like, who are these people? And the Mycelium crew just seeded the conference so well. And we used many of the methodologies coming out of the art of hosting and other practices that we had. And so the women, the traditional group, said, you know, this was not like any other meeting I've ever been to. And that was my real awakening to the fact that we need to be with people who can push us theologically, push us academically, push us in ways of thinking that we would have never encountered. But I also think that we can't do that unless we know who we are.
Okay.
And so wow. There's a both and to it, right?
Yes.
And that conference really, and people still who were there, you know, my traditional group, they say, you know, are you going to do another conference? Someone asked me that last week, as a matter of fact. Are you going to do another conference? I said, nope. Nothing like that.
One and done.
So, and Ella Mitchell's family was there, which was wonderful. And the key point for me was when Ella Mitchell's daughter looked around the circle of all of this diversity. Yes, the traditional African-American middle-aged ministerial group of women was there, but then this seeding of wonderful people who had no knowledge of Ella Mitchell, number one, and then who were welcoming and open to learning and teaching, and it became a mutual appreciation of one another and a mutual respect and support of one another. And so her daughter looked around the circle and said, this is my mother's legacy.
Whoa.
And I almost fainted. I just broke down and cried, you know, that I knew that Ella Mitchell was pleased with what had happened, what, you know, what I had thought of, what that was going to be so traditional, and, you know, we were going to do the regular stuff. But now it was completely different, and her daughter just said, this is what my mother wanted. In other words, this is who my mother was too. And that was my confirmation that I had done what I was supposed to have done, even though it took me into spaces. I learned how to do a website. If you can, you don't know me.
Yeah.
If you really knew me, my doing a website for this conference, I mean, that was revolutionary.
Oh, that's so great.
It stretched me in ways that were so wonderful. And that's where I really owned this mantra of, if everybody looks like you, thinks like you, talks like you, you know, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because the infusion of all this diversity and difference and support led me in a completely new direction.
Well, let's talk more about that direction. So where is it leading you into?
After some time with Mycelium, I did, I think, 4 events with them. I was brought onto the board and then became chair of the board, and Mycelium went through a transition. And Matthew Abrams, who was one of the co-founders of Mycelium, and I began to talk about what we could do together. And that gave rise to The Bridge, which is what he and I are doing today. And Matthew and I came together and just began talking about our lives, talking about ourselves, mm-hmm. and really giving space to each other to talk about our similarities and, most importantly, our differences. That we came to love each other because we were so different, because we could hear one another in the midst of the differences, and because we could understand each other. And what we realized was amazing to both of us is that, you know, this is not the first time we've met. We've known each other like maybe, you know, 40 million years or some, you know, some eons of time. That, you know, how many times have we known each other, and in how many spaces and how many ways, you know, were we whales together? So, you know, so we realized that even though we look completely different, we come from completely different worlds, we have completely different experiences, that there is a bond on which we can stand, and that bond we call the bridge. So wow. that relationship gave rise to this work, and this work is work where we want to give voice to all of the differences. Can we come together? Can we sit together? Can we be together across our differences, across the chasms that the world, that society, that history have given us? Can we come together across those differences and walk together through spirit? And I think spirit is the other thing that has really united him and me, but it has also propelled us into this work. So we're very excited. We've been talking and walking and writing poetry, and I think you may have been a part of that at the gathering.
I'd love for you to share that a little bit more. Just hearing the ways that y'all, like, I don't know if there was, it'd be interesting to, I just think the way you think about spiritual friendship and the way the two of y'all became, like you spoke into each other's, and it seems like you still speak into one another's life in a deep way, but you took a leap to do that. So just a little bit of, like, was that something that just gradually happened? Because at one point I remember hearing, like, there were Skype calls on a weekly basis. There's journaling you're sending to one another almost on a daily basis. A lot of really, like, getting deep into what does my transformation look like and what does your transformation look like, that really brought out an entirely new experience for both of you.
Yes, exactly that. And we covenanted early on, and it just felt like we needed to express ourselves. And, you know, how do we describe what we're doing? How do we describe who we are? And so poetry began to emerge. And then these Skype calls, we were doing Skype calls from an hour and a half to 2 hours every week.
Wow.
And we did that for about 18 months to 2 years. So that's a lot of time.
that's a big investment. Yes.
Yes, it's a big investment in another human being. And then to who we are together. And that was the thing, that we realize that it's a yin and yang, that we're different, but we can't see ourselves apart from each other. And that's it's kind of miraculous in a way that you would that we would devote that kind of space and time to this relationship. And we know that the work that we're being called to do requires that.
Mm-hmm.
So those 2 years or 2.5 or 3 years of doing that, of walking together, as we call it, in those ways have prepared us for now launching this bridge. So you know, I think it's very important that when you say you're going to work with someone and work with someone around issues that are very tenuous and can bring about all kinds of emotional and reactions, that you know one another, that you completely trust one another, that you can give your life for one another, if you will. And I think we're growing into that. And as we all know, with any intimate relationship, it takes that. It takes growing into it with each other. And he and I have committed to that. And I remember at one point I was saying, you know, I can't believe this. I don't know about this. And I'm not sure about this. And he just said, ask me. Anytime you get nervous about, you know, am I here? Are we doing this? Or, you know, he just said, ask me.
Mm.
And I just breathe, you know. So that was great. And that was my sign, you know, that this is real. And so we believe that that relationship and that cultivation of the relationship are the bedrock, you know, that is the bridge on which we're standing to do the work that we're being called to do.
That's amazing. So are you, like, that type of patient work blows my mind. Are you inclined to be that patient, or was it, did you not have an idea that you were building something together, but it just began as friendship and then it became clear there's a project we're building?
Exactly. We began just as friends and just saying, you know, what is, we, you know, he would ask sometimes, what is this? And I would say, what is this?
Uh-huh.
So we wonder, and we still wonder, you know, what is this?
What a great, when you talk about when you led with, are there ways to experience the other where we're not boxed into like-mindedness? I think this anecdote you're describing, or antidote you're describing, is, do I have places in my life where I can just go, what is this?
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
Not quickly reducible. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to stay with it.
That's, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in some relationships, you do that, but and you come in and out of it, but we've committed to doing it, you know, and when we hit a wall together, we just say, okay, all right, wait a minute, what was that? What just happened? And you unpack it, but you keep going, mm-hmm. keep going. And so that's what we've committed to, you know, to the end of this experience on this plane, and then we'll be ready to jump off into the next plane and see what that is too.
So loose. I love it. So when we were together at the gathering, there was I'd be interested to see how you would describe it, but what made this gathering unique was there was a lot of age diversity, there was a lot of racial diversity, a lot of sexual orientation diversity. These were all folks that kind of somehow identified under the moniker of spiritual entrepreneur, but there was an intention early on, and I don't know if this was unique to the other gatherings that this group had, but to have the cohorts that would meet, caucuses that would meet over lunch, right? So there were people of color having that were caucusing about their experience, and then the invitation was, then did white folks want to caucus as well and kind of think about from their experience? So now there's a like-mindedness factor, right, or a similar experience, similar embodiment factor that would happen in these over these lunches. And it wasn't required, but I found myself drawn to being in that conversation, and then I experienced that brought forth a new level of courage to name some tension Would you put it that way, or I kind of want to set up the evening we had together, but I remember that tension building.
Okay. Yes, I would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would say from the people of color side, there was somewhat of a feeling of being left out, locked out. Our voices were not being heard in the ways that I think some people felt we should have been heard. And so I think your conversations with the white-only group and then the people of color group voicing these things separately,
yeah,
when we came together on that Saturday night,
mm-hmm,
a fire was lit, literally, in the room, you know, like,
yeah,
come on, what's going to happen here? And people calling the conveners to account.
Mm-hmm.
And what I remember is that the conveners sat down.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in the back of the room with Matthew, and Matthew had gotten there that day. So he hadn't been in any of the previous conversations. So he's like kind of walking into this. And so when we were sitting in the back of the room and the conveners sat down, I just said, oh no. Because when you relinquish space, there's danger.
Yeah.
You know, are we safe here? And so from a facilitation point of view, I was kind of nervous, you know, what's getting ready to happen?
Right.
And so what happened was that people of color just said, we're taking this space.
Mm.
And we began to sing, we began to speak out, and there was a rhythm in the room and a fire in the room, and different people were just, you know, popcorn, saying what they needed to say. And I remember at one point, Matthew stood up and Matthew said, there are white people in this room and we have something to say. We're in solidarity with you and we need to speak too. There should be, or there must be, space for us. And we're all here together, kind of thing. Like, white people, don't just sit here. You're in it. You know, you're a part of this. And you know, coming from the white-only group, feeling, you know, saying what you just, you know, what you were just sharing, come on, talk.
Yeah.
And so by that time, I think after he said that, then the whole room got lit, not just the people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody then began to share. And I think we also had Jewish people there, of course, who were speaking from the Jewish perspective, you know, that this is like really like a Christian thing we're in and we don't have a voice, you know. So everybody kind of shared the dis-ease that they had. And then really solidarity in the midst of it. I mean, it was, again, a both and. And that was my experience of it. What would you say?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, both ends, a great way to put it. I felt like there was an openness to we know what this is, and we don't, to use your language, what is this? That was both happening. There was a sense, and it's interesting, I don't remember Matthew saying that. I do remember sitting next to a variety of folks, but to one of my sides was a guy pretty similar life experience and race as me, there was, when there was nobody speaking afterwards, he and I were talking about it and said, like, there's this sense of, do I need to speak into the nothingness, or do I need to step back and watch? And there was something palpable about, like, since then I've read some, Cynthia Bourgeau has this book on centering prayer, and she talks about the cloud of unknowing, in that, mm-hmm, the author is kind of stabbing into the cloud. This mm-hmm, longing that comes from the heart that says, I'm not going to fill it with words. I'm going to hold open space. And that would be the closest I'd know how to describe what was happening in that moment, was a willingness for openness. Now, I don't know if this was everybody's experience, but it just had a shimmer to it. Like you're talking about,
right,
that fire.
Yeah.
And then I remember a dear person that they gave me permission to share the story, but I won't share their name, but that was sitting beside you, transgender person who then needed to share their experience. and just the depth of their experience that was also multicultural, coming from immigrant family, and just all of this and how that played into faith and how that played into what does belong. And what was it? I think it was Daniel, the spoken word guy, that asked the question of what is sanctuary? Was that the question? And so different folks would riff on that, and so our friend was doing that, and they were sitting right next to you, and I can remember it as clear as yesterday, clear as today, that there you are behind me going, because they started weeping, that friend of ours, they were weeping about that experience, and you said, you said, okay, baby, come on, just share it, just say it, and you were midwifing, you were mm-hmm. present to mm-hmm. what the longing was, and there was a longing in the room.
Mm.
And for me, it had an unmistakable sacredness to it that became for me a big integrative moment, like a life integrative moment, to be able to say, this is as holy as, like, one of my teachers had this, and I shared this with you, right? I have a teacher that talks about the integration of our contemplative practice to life, and that there was a moment where the contemplative practice, the sitting and meditation, is so sweet, and then leaving that to go into the everyday is more bittersweet, and like, here we go through the routine. And he said there'll be a moment when you notice that this ground, this space we're in right now, shimmers with the same quality as that home space of prayer and meditation and contemplation. And when you do, at that moment, you've got to turn around and kneel and kiss the ground. And so the room was busy enough that there wasn't a lot of attention on me to do that. But doing that and then having you be a witness to that and you calling that out in me was so powerful.
Oh, I'm sitting here now and tears are in my eyes remembering that, because what you said was the teacher told you, you will know when it's God and you will kiss the ground.
Yeah.
And that just spoke to me so. And I didn't know until just now that it was that experience with our friend that caused you to kiss the ground.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, we're connected, brother.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And it was such a powerful, that experience, and our friend and I have talked about it, and our friend said that they will never be the same, that was a complete transformative moment for them.
Yeah.
And that it was, that life now will be spoken of in a way like before that event and after that event.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So well, for you, it was the same thing. You're saying the same thing.
Same thing for me. It was right there. There was lightning happening. That was
and
something.
What I was not aware of in that time, I was being used, as you said, as a midwife or and I was just holding them, you know,
mm-hmm.
and what I didn't know was that Matthew had his hand on me and that the chaplain had his hand on Matthew so that there was power and love coming through me, not just through me, but through literally to other people, to me, through me, to our friend.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so that I believe the ancestors were in it, that every, you know, that it was so much more than just our friend and me, you know, that there, the presence of even those two others, and then the room was with us.
The room was with us. Yeah.
The room was with us. That was a transformative moment for everybody, I think, when our friends just started crying,
sobbing,
and sobbing and hollering.
And I mean, and I had gone there for entrepreneurship networking. Oh man, yeah,
okie dokie.
Yeah, there we go. Well,
it was so powerful, and I'm Troy. I'm so thankful for your sharing with me, you know, that experience that you had, because it just confirmed for me the power of spirit to transcend everything that we think we know. Like you said, you thought you knew why you were there, or I thought I knew, you know, that I was just comforting someone. Yeah, right.
Yeah, wow.
It was so much more.
So we're going to turn a little bit towards you guiding us in a practice, but I'd like to ask a little bit more about what your practice looks like, really in light of this sense of elderhood, because I think this process of both deciding in the application process for that, I mean, you know, it's an anecdote for everybody that's listening that this conference, because they weren't there, but that you made a choice to say, I would speak into this as an elder. And then the folks convening,
right.
Even the latest report they have on care of the soul, they talk about elderhood as an essential piece that's kind of missing a needed additive, a needed practice to be revived.
Right.
So what is it like to practice being an elder? And then what is it? Do you have a contemplative rhythm that enforces that?
That's an interesting question. What came to mind as you were saying that is I walk. I embody my experience. And so I think eldership is something that is both internally owned, but also externally validated. I think people tell us who we are, in other words. So I would not necessarily say I'm an elder, you know, even though I know I am,
mm-hmm.
but I allow other people to see that in me. So there are ways that I may speak that people recognize, oh, I hadn't thought of that, or oh my goodness, you know, I used to have I've always tell the story of my friend Carolyn and I when we were in seminary, when we were in our 20s and 30s, and we thought, you know, later in our 30s in ministry, and we said, well, you know, we know a lot of stuff, but they won't pay attention to us until we have gray hair. So, you know, there's something that, you know, people say, if you live long enough, you'll be wise. Well, you know, that's debatable, because there's a lot of older people who don't have much wisdom, and there's a lot of young people who we are, like we say, you know, they've been here before, or, you know, they're an old spirit. So I think eldership is something that is externally validated. It's like your calling, you know, that you know you're called to something, but you have to know that others see that calling in you. And that's what ordination services are all about. You know, it's the community validating what's already there. That's what baptism is about, validating what God has done internally.
Hmm.
So I think there's a both and to it, that I know certain things and I walk a certain way, and it's also recognized and validated by the world around me. So I think one of the things that I've learned is to listen more. I think if there's a sign of wisdom in most of us, it is, you know, speak less and listen more. So I'm learning to listen more. And when I speak, I try to speak into not necessarily what is being said, but maybe what is being asked. There's a subtlety there, right? So people may be talking, but the talking is not necessarily what they're asking or what they're really wanting in the situation. So I try to listen underneath. and I think there's a wisdom there. So, but I walk it. I'll walk it. I had an experience many years ago with a colleague group that literally did a ceremony. It was a surprise to me, a surprise for me, and they named me Queen Mother. And all the group back then, you know, I said, I will walk into this for the rest of my life. I didn't, you know, oh, I can't do that, or why would you do this? No, I knew that because they named me, because they saw something in me Again, and I think, again, we're talking about leadership, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
So this queen mother, walking in this queen mother way has led to this eldership. And so it's conferred. It's not something that you know, you say, oh, this is who I am or this is what I am. It's something that the community, I believe, confers on one as one walks. So I'm very, very humble about, you know, all of this. And yet I know that there are things I have to offer as in response to the calling or to the honoring in that way, being honored in that way by being called an elder. So I do not take it lightly, and I know that there's more that I need to learn and more that I need to experience from other elders so that I can, you know, grow even more into the role.
Yeah.
Well, Marcia Foster Boyd, this has been a real treat.
Wonderful to talk to you.
So good. So good. All these gems about eldership and leadership. We'll have a lot to think on. We're going to take a break and come back and have you actually guide us in a practice. Is there anything you want to do to kind of set folks up for that, or give some background to where it come from, where this practice comes from?
I'm going to share one of the practices that was shared with me in a group that really was, again, a transformative moment. So I've just... am privileged and honored that I would be invited to share. And it may be a meditation that others have done already, but we're going to enter this and walk through this together. And every time we do a meditation or a practice, we know that even though it may be a familiar practice, that we need to open ourselves to hearing or seeing or experiencing something new in it. So it may be familiar to some, but I just say, what's new in this particular practice for you?
Beautiful. Well, thanks so much. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Hey there, you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsing, founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action. We're a nonprofit located in the Northside neighborhood of Cincinnati, and we get folks together for 6 to 8 week groups. You can hear more about us at cincyhive.org. Today's episode is also brought to you by Family Time Kitchen, a mother-daughter duo whose mission is to bring you and your family back together around the dinner table. They're hoping that you'll sit down together to eat delicious, wholesome, and healthy foods with the whole family. They even have these make-your-own mason jar salads that are those easy-to-grab kind of lunch things. And the best part, they'll deliver to your doorstep here in Cincinnati. You can look in our show notes for details, but it's Family Time Kitchen. Now we're going to jump back in with Marcia Foster Boyd as she guides us in a contemplative practice. Well, we're back with Marcia Foster Boyd. Boy, this has been a great conversation.
Me too. Thank you.
You bet. You bet. Well, I'm going to just step back and invite you to guide us in a practice now. So you've got the mic.
I'd just like for us to take a few breaths together, breathing in and out. In and out. In and out. Hopefully you're comfortable, seated in a way that allows you to sink into yourself for a while. As you continue breathing, you can close your eyes if that's comfortable for you. And as you close your eyes and pay attention to your breathing in and out, in and out. I invite you to picture a warm, sunny summer day. Clouds in the sky, sun shining overhead. Breeze blowing past your face. And I'd invite you to look around and notice there are woods in front of you. Maybe some evergreen trees, maybe some cedars, beautiful woods, lush vegetation. And as you look, you see a path. And as you look at that path, you're being compelled, you're being drawn to just step into it. So from the place where you are, you begin to walk into the woods along this path. The sun peeping through the trees, but it's not as bright as it was before you entered the woods, but you can still see the glimmers, the shimmers of the sunlight coming through the tall trees as you continue to walk. You hear the birds, maybe some rustling in the bushes, but it's okay. You're walking into these woods on this path. And now, in the distance, you see a clearing. That's curious. A clearing in the woods. And so you continue to walk toward the clearing. And as you're walking, you see a figure sitting. And you continue to walk toward this figure. And you notice it's a person. You're coming closer. And you begin to look at the person and, oh my, I recognize this person. They're sitting in the clearing, and I look down, and the person is smiling at me. It's a person I know, and a person who knows me. This person loves me, and I love this person. This person is someone whom I've learned from in the past, who's taught me much, who I honor as I see them. And by just their presence, their eyes, their smile, I'm being invited to sit with them. No words between us, just a deep recognition, a deep honoring, a deep love, a deep knowing that we share. And so, you sit down and you just look into each other's eyes, paying attention to how close you are to each other. Are you touching each other? Are you holding each other? Or are you just so thankful, so happy, so surprised that you're just looking at each other? And then this person begins to speak to you. And because you know one another so well, this person is speaking words to you that you have longed to hear in this moment. What are the words that this person is sharing? Speaking to your longing, your heart's longing, your spirit's longing. They know. What are the words that you're hearing? What are the sensations in your body? And now, even though you know you don't want to leave this person, not again, you want to stay here. You want to be here. You don't want to get up. You want to be here, even if it's forever. Let's just stay right here in this love, in this depth of knowing one another, in this gift given through the words that have been shared. In this sweet reunion. But both of you know it's time to go. What do you do? As you stand, as you look at one another for the last time, as the person remains in the clearing, but as you know, you have to turn and say goodbye. How do you feel? But you know you have to go. So you turn. And the path shimmers in front of you because of that beautiful encounter. Everything looks different. Everything feels different. You're walking now toward the edge of the forest, the edge of the woods, and the sun is shining on your face. And you're smiling and you're settled in yourself, knowing that the words that were shared with you in the clearing were just the words you needed for this time. as you take your leave, as you come back to this space and this time, in the here and in the now, sensing your body, sensing your heartbeat, breathing in and out, in and out, in and out, refreshed, renewed, and grateful for this encounter in the woods. And as you're ready, and as you're able, you can open your eyes and come into the present.
There we go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. Wow. This has been great. Well, we'll have to do this again. This has been outstanding. Thanks so much for your time and energy and just openness.
Thank you so much for the invitation. And anytime I can be of service in this way or any other way we can communicate and connect with each other, I'm happy to do it.
Sounds great. We'll put some more notes in the... in the podcast notes for ways for folks can to plug in with what you're doing, in particular the Bridge Collective event coming up this this fall in.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Out great. Here. Great. Yeah. And thank you so much again.
You betcha. Marcia Foster Boyd, it's been a pleasure. You have a great day. Hey, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this has been From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets up with mindful everyday living. Today, we've been talking with Marcia Foster Boyd. You can check out the show notes for ways that you can connect to her work, and you can be on the lookout next week for the pocket practice. From the Hive is produced by Joey Taylor. Take a deep breath and enjoy your day.